Brett, sometimes I dream of becoming an actor. Have you ever dreamt of becoming an actor? Maureen, what is it you think I do for a living? Never mind, sounds like you need the New York Film Academy. NYFA offers workshops, BFA and MFA degrees and summer camps in filmmaking, acting, journalism and more, online and on campuses across the globe. To make films alongside industry professionals, explore more at nyfa.edu. Thanks, Brett. Thank you, Maureen.
Apple Card is the perfect cashback rewards credit card. You earn up to 3% daily cash on every purchase, every day. That's 3% on your favorite products at Apple, 2% on all other Apple Card with Apple Pay purchases, and 1% on anything you buy with your titanium Apple Card or virtual card number. Visit apple.co/card calculator to see how much you can earn. Apple Card issued by Goldman Sachs Bank USA, Salt Lake City branch. Subject to credit approval. Terms apply.
Maureen, your Canva presentation looks brilliant. Thanks, Brett. That's because I used AI-powered Canva presentations. I just described what I wanted, and Canva presentations generated the perfect slides. You can even make a talking presentation for people to watch on their own time. Check this out. Recording. 101 Reasons Why Beaches is the Saddest Film Ever Made by your neighbour Maureen. Is it easy to use? If you can use a computer, you can nail your next work presentation with Canva Presentations at canva.com, designed for work. Oh, thanks, my neighbour Maureen. Yeah, thank you.
Look out. There's only films to be buried with.
Hello and welcome to Films to be Buried With. My name is Brett Goldstein. I'm a comedian, an actor, a writer, a director, a piano stool, and I love films. As Emily Dickinson once said, hope is the thing with feathers that perches in the soul and sings the tune without the words and never stops at all. Also, have you ever seen the Meryl Streep film Hope Springs? It's wildly underrated, I think. Oh, I would agree with that, actually, Emily. Thanks for bringing that up. Every week, I invite a special guest over. I tell them they've died. Then I get them to discuss their life through the films that meant the most to them. Previous guests include Himesh Patel, Barry Jenkins, Sharon Stone, and even... But this week, it is part two with the one and only, the man himself, Jason Sudeikis. Remember, you can watch all of Ted Lasso seasons 1-3 on Apple TV+. Get all caught up on them before you listen to this. Head over to the Patreon at patreon.com/Brett Goldstein, where you get extra stuff for all the episodes. You get secrets. We discuss beginnings and endings. You get all the episodes uncut and ad-free and often as a video. Check it out over at patreon.com/Brett Goldstein. This week, as a very special treat, I've included the Patreon section for everyone because it is filled with so much good stuff and I'm a nice boy. But I have kept Jason's secret only for the Patreons because rules are rules and I think you understand that. So this is part two with Jason Sudeikis. We picked this up right where we left off with everyone's favourite question. So that's it for now. I very much hope you enjoy episode 262 of Films to be Buried With. Here's probably why everyone's listening. What's the film you found the sexiest, Jason Sudeikis?
Yeah, it's funny because... I think it's Leaving Las Vegas or Eyes Wide Shut.
Okay.
Those are fucking nuts, right? I put them both, but I think I put them both because on the questionnaire, it's like, troubling boners.
Yeah.
Right? Which I would have the same two answers.
So for those who've never listened to it, there's a subcategory, troubling boners, worrying wide ones, film you found arousing, you aren't sure you should. So you're putting both these and flipping them around. Now, firstly, Leaving Las Vegas, I'm a huge fan of. Mm-hmm. I listened to that soundtrack on repeat for years.
Same.
Amazing.
Yep.
I love it. I also think, can I tell you this? Mm-hmm. And I will.
Yeah.
People versus Larry Flynn.
Yeah.
Which I also love very much.
I haven't seen it in years, but I remember loving it.
Has a similar thing that I really, the end of Leaving Las Vegas and the end of People versus Larry Flynn, both has a kind of non-judgmental sex scene that is, what's the word for it? Like it's about love.
Mm-hmm.
But it's disturbing.
Mm-hmm.
It's often disturbing. And in Leaving Las Vegas, he, spoiler, skip this if you haven't seen Leaving Las Vegas. He's an alcoholic.
He achieves his goal.
He finally has sex with her as his...
Well, I mean, his goal was to kill himself.
Yes, but also whilst... And he says...
What are you saying?
He says, I believe he says, look how hard you made me my angel.
Yeah, yeah.
Is what he says as they finally consummate their relationship.
Yeah.
He's not been able to because he's a...
alcoholic. And it's sort of disturbing and sad and beautiful and love and complicated. And People vs. Larry Flynn, Courtney Love plays a sort of very difficult, tragic figure, drug addict, all sorts of problems, and is kind of destructive to everyone around her. Mm-hmm. But Larry Flynn loves her and no one else does. Everyone in the film kind of hates her. And at the very end of the film, after she's died, and it ends with him watching a video of her sort of doing a striptease mm-hmm. for him.
Mm-hmm.
And it's a similar sort of vibe of like, from the outside, you could judge these people, you could say there's so many things wrong with this.
Mm-hmm.
But this love, it's a love story. They're both proper, complicated, beautiful love stories.
Yeah, probably loved her more as an object than the last one. And, you know, Larry Flynn, I don't know. I'd have to rewatch it all to sort of like download how my brain would handle it now. But even the Leaving Las Vegas thing, like, I mean, sexiest versus like romantic. And if they're like, whatever, wherever those two are intertwined is probably more of the way I view Leaving Las Vegas as romantic. I mean, the sexiness of quote unquote Eyes Wide Shut is pretty, you know, obvious. And I don't know, even know if that's really, I mean, I wrote them here because I was kind of like, oh, these feel, I think it is weird. I can judge myself for finding Leaving Las Vegas sexy because I'm not talking about like, obviously like the awful scenes with the, like the frat guys or even that final scene, but like their relationship, where they both are in their lives and their willingness to go to like fall into each other, I find incredibly sexy and romantic, you know? And there's tons of less, I don't want to say controversial, but titillating versions of that story, you know, out there, like, you know, isn't like Before Sunrise or Before Sunset, like, aren't those like versions of that where strangers, you know, strangers meet and then they just have that that moment they fall. I haven't seen either. I apologize, but that's,
you must.
I know. But I just love that part of Leaving Las Vegas, and that was another movie that was around that time was when I would, if there was a book, I would also read the book, and I remember reading the book by John O'Brien. And there's passages from that book that I think about all the time. Like there's a line where he writes about the unspoken anticipation of conversations yet to be had. You know, and I think what is a better summation of like chemistry or like young or early love, right?
Yeah.
You know, and then there's the other, I don't have them memorized, but there's quotes that I literally have in my wallet right now from that book. Have you ever showed that to you?
Please
show me. But I remember, like we've talked about this because it comes up all the time, especially with our show. So much of it is rooted in these things, and these things are like, I mean, three sheets of paper. But this is my handwriting from 1995, probably 96. I went to go see Leaving Las Vegas by myself on New Year's Eve, going from 95 and then 96. That's probably like the second or third time I'd seen it in the theaters. I don't know, because I didn't have a girlfriend. I didn't want to sit at home. I was living with my parents. I didn't want to be in the basement. They were going to be out. Sisters maybe were going to have friends over, so I went to go see Leaving Las Vegas at the art theater. But this is from the book. A slight elusive chemistry which occurs only occasionally when two people meet. Always a welcome surprise. It is a sort of quick familiarity, implied permission to conduct relations at a level which is a bit deeper than the superficiality of introduction. And like the last time I pulled this out of my wallet and showed it to people was when Hannah was shooting her scenes on the boat. Because I believe in that. It happens all the time between men and women, between men and men, between women and women. And I think that's sexy, I guess.
I love it.
I really do.
I love it. Yeah.
Because we're all built to like be scared of each other at this point.
Yeah.
You know, it's more than ever. And when that shit gets dropped, and may you keep it dropped as long as possible. Because I think at some point, you know, first person that puts a brick down and puts a little concrete on top of them, puts another brick, and you go, whoa. You're putting bricks up? no. This is just, I'm just building a...
I'm making something.
Yeah. okay.
to sit on. You don't need to sit.
I'm tired. I just want to sit down. All right. But yeah. And then Eyes Wide Shut, we've talked about.
Now, I've seen it once.
Yep.
Did not like it.
Yep.
I watched it yesterday.
Yep.
In preparation for this, as an older man, and I find it a fascinating film, and I've lost you on it, but I want to hear you before
I just think it is a meditation on male jealousy for like hours. Like I think it's all like the love of your life that you've taken for granted, then tells you that she's had fantasies, and then how that tears you up inside, and like off he goes, and is presented with one obstacle or angel or illusion or, you know, possibility, endeavor after another, indulgence, whatever you want to call it.
Yeah.
And he just has to, and he just, what's he going to do? What's he going to do? What's he going to do? I just think, I haven't watched it in a while, but.
It's wild.
Yeah. But I'd felt that pain, that questioning of my worth, my self-worth, my value at the hands of another person at a young enough age that it rocked me in a way that when I saw it, I was like, oh. Now, is that sexy? No, but I mean, the imagery is obviously, you know, sexy. I mean, I guess to a certain degree, like, you know, I like people's faces, but I guess the masks.
Well, there's lots of, lots of very nice bodies.
Yeah.
In it.
Yeah. Sure. And I'm sure all the guys in masks probably have great bodies too.
They probably do, but of course, I had so many thoughts about it. Have you seen Beau Is Afraid?
What?
Beau Is Afraid, mm-mm. The Ari Aster film?
No.
That's sort of like a 3-hour comedy.
Yeah.
A kind of extreme comedy of paranoia and guilt. The idea that you're sort of like, that the world is conspiring against you or whatever. Yeah. Eyes Wide Shut is a kind of 2.5-hour film about the world genuinely conspiring against Tom Cruise ever getting laid.
Mm-hmm.
Like the whole thing, and it kind of is conceptually funny.
Yeah.
It's not funny.
No.
It didn't make me laugh ever, but it is kind of funny. The situations are funny. He goes to this person mm-hmm. to have sex and then can't. He goes to this person, the person he nearly had sex with, then she's dead. This person had HIV. Like it's kind of the whole 2-night event he goes to a masked ball and gets found out he's not meant to be there, even though he's wearing a mask.
No, he could have taken any one of those rooms and had sex with Alan Cumming if that was his you know, preference.
But
Alan Cumming, incredible in that movie.
Yeah, really good in that
movie. Like, just like 3 minutes and just wait, like, that is an example that I would give for like a day player any day of the week, or it's just like, or night, like, where I'm just like, watch this. Well, that's Alan Cumming. We didn't know that then.
Yeah.
I mean, people in New York would have known in the theater world, but like, I didn't know it was Alan Cumming. All I knew is that fucking dude is like,
he's got one scene in the air.
Feels like so real and knows so much more about what's going on than what's going on. And I loved it.
You say a day player, it was a Kubrick film. He was probably there for
five
years. Just do that one scene.
Nice work if you can get it. You know. Per diem alone, you know.
And what I find really interesting, and I hadn't realized, because it's a weird film for Tom Cruise to have made,
mm-hmm.
because his character is essentially emasculated for 2.5 hours. Mm-hmm. Every scene he walks into, he looks like Tom Cruise and acts like Tom Cruise
leaves
the scene emasculated and a fool. And
his wife, the confession she makes is about as emasculating as like one could become, like through words, you know, just like, you know, she's just in there in that reverie and she's living it right in front of him. He's just like, what the fuck? And I love the even when he thinks about it, when they're going to his flashbacks and the guy's still in his uniform and she's completely naked and it's like that blue light where everybody looks good in. And it's just like, that's exactly what it can feel like.
Yeah.
You know?
The fact that he did Magnolia next, I'm like, it's so interesting.
Did he do, was that right after?
They came out the same year, so that's, I'm assuming. Amazing,
I always love that.
He did he did the most emasculated character and then played the most hyper-masculine.
Yeah, that's something else. That for me is like...
It's a good double bill.
Yeah, 100%. Like, it's, I think like about that
guy would become that guy if they hadn't fucked at the end of Eyes Wide Shut.
I always think about that with Tom Hanks. Like in 1987, I think it would have been he did both Punchline and Big. Because they came out in 88. And you're just like, wow, that's like, I felt that, you know, I think right around the same time, I did Mother's Day and Colossal, same beard. And I think they overlapped. And part of the reason I had to, because I wanted a beard for Colossal and I did Mother's Day first and they wanted me to be clean shaven. I was like, I can't because I have to have a beard for this. And this is, you know, and they it all got worked out. But like, that's like one of those weird, it's certainly something I know when choosing things to sketch, like sketch comedy, like, actor in me that doesn't want to play the same characters, you know, in the scene right after I just played that character. It's also part of me that probably made, you know, mixtapes. You know, you don't want to have, you know, two Public Enemy songs right after each other. You want to have, you know, one to open you up and one to close you out or something like that, you know. Yeah. But yeah, that's great. I didn't
realize it's
in the same year.
And it's like a film noir in that he's this kind of guy who doesn't know as much as he thinks he knows and is destroyed by a femme fatale, except that it's all in his head.
Yeah.
It's so weird. And in fairness,
yeah,
unlike a film noir, has a happy ending.
Yeah.
Has a positive, like...
Similar ending, you know, it's like, what do you say? I think we need to, need to fuck. Right?
Yeah.
Like, it's like almost similar
in a way.
Is there
something we need to do very soon? What's that? Fuck.
Yeah.
Hard cut.
Yeah.
Good end.
Yeah. Not too dissimilar from Leave Las Vegas and Larry Flint in a way.
Yeah.
Except, you know, they're both alive, so they can do it, yeah.
Very weird
film. Yeah, yeah.
Maureen, what's this I hear about you going to film school? I am. I want to gain valuable skills while making films and developing my creativity, so I'm attending the New York Film Academy. I'm thinking about becoming one of them people that writes the numbers on the title board. NYFA is a very respected film school. I hear they offer a variety of options to meet your educational goals, whether you want a BFA or MFA degree, or want to learn at a quicker pace with a short-term program. That's right! They've got workshops and summer camps in filmmaking, acting, cinematography, screenwriting, producing, game design, musical theatre, and more. Are you attending in New York? Might do. They have multiple campuses in some amazing locations like New York, LA, Miami, Italy, Australia, and online. And you can learn more about the New York Film Academy at nyfa.edu. That's nyfa.edu. Thanks, Maureen.
Apple Card is the perfect cashback rewards credit card. You earn up to 3% daily cash on every purchase, every day. That's 3% on your favorite products at Apple, 2% on all other Apple Card with Apple Pay purchases, and 1% on anything you buy with your titanium Apple Card or virtual card number. Visit apple.co/card calculator to see how much you can earn. Apple Card issued by Goldman Sachs Bank USA, Salt Lake City branch. Subject to credit approval. Terms apply.
Snag a Job is where America goes to hire, with the deepest talent pool in hourly hiring. With access to over 6 million active hourly workers, Snag a Job is the all-in-one solution for hiring high-quality employees who can cover all your needs. On demand, temp to hire, part-time or full-time. You name the position: warehouse worker, retail associate, grocery store clerk, fitness trainer, baker, stylist, bellhop, podcast producer. Yeah, Snagajob's got a worker for that. With our easy-to-use platform, you're able to seamlessly post and fill available positions quickly, with a dedicated customer support team to provide all the help you need along the way. Kind of nice knowing you have a talent pool like that in your own backyard, right? Snagajob is the partner you need to keep your business running smoothly. So visit snagajob.com or text snag to 242424 to talk to an expert. Snagajob.com, where America goes to hire.
What is objectively,
yeah,
the greatest film of all time? Might not be your favorite.
I mean, I spoke about it earlier, but I mean, Citizen Kane.
Yeah, correct.
I know it's like AFI top one. It like sounds like such a pretentious answer, but every time I watch it, I do have the tendency to put it in the time and place of when it was made, how it was made, you know.
Yeah.
Because, I don't know, I honor that context. And it does. It comes back for me, you know, time and time again. And people much smarter than myself, you know,
would concur.
So I feel pretty good about my answer there.
I think you've one of the few people who's understood the objective quality of this question.
Great. Boom.
What is the film that you could or have watched the most over and over again?
Three came to mind really quick, and they're all still like, and so I sort of had them based on if anyone came up earlier, but none of these ones come up. But I put Pulp Fiction, Color of Money, and Beverly Hills Cop. Beverly Hills Cop, I've spoken about to a degree, but you know, Pulp Fiction and Color of Money. I knew I liked Color of Money growing up because it was one of those movies I saw with my dad, and I love going to play pool with my dad, which really was usually me playing pool next to him. It's sort of what the dart speech is based on, although he said it was billiards, and my dad would play with friends and I'd play on the table next to him and just get plowed on cherry cokes and potato skins, and he'd let me have money for the jukebox, so it was great, you know. And I'd just get to watch my dad play and see him and his, and they'd play doubles, and it'd be like, you know, Sunday afternoon, you know, or Saturday afternoon. It was great. We're going up to Buddy's, you want to come? Yeah, you know, we get Taco Bell afterwards, blah blah blah. But that movie, I loved it then. I loved the soundtrack. That was a soundtrack I used to bring over to friends when I had sleepovers, especially if a friend had a pool table, which a couple people did. You know, they're, you know, doing better than my folks, so they had a pool table in their house, and I'd put on that thing, and I'd try to do all the moves and all the shots from The Color of Money, and it was just from beginning to practice, you know, once a week, all the time with my dad, and then, who's still alive and all that. I'm just saying that darts replace billiards, but the impetus for that monologue is in that time and space. And then as I got older, I remember going to see it, Ezra and I went to go see it at the Metrograph. They had all the Scorsese. And like, it feels really, really weird when people are talking about Scorsese and they're going around, which favorite Scorsese movie? And I'm the one that says Color of Money. Nobody says Color of Money. We said it on the show, You know, like, but that's it. And I was recently, I saw Ed Norton, who's brilliant. Like, you know, like legitimately like knows movies, but also just flat out like brilliant.
Right.
And we were talking about something. Oddly enough, we were talking about like Tom Cruise and Magnolia and that character, and he was saying how much he loved it. And Ed's got 1,000 stories about, and they're all like, you know, fairly recent too. So it's like, it's not like he's dipping back into his bag of tricks of like, you know, when I met Walter Matthau, even though he probably knows Walter Matthau, you know, or worked with him in some way. Anyway, he's talking about Tom Cruise and he goes, that part by him is so incredible. And it's just like that. And I was about to say, yeah, but my favorite, he goes, I mean, between that, I mean, not like Color of Money. He says that and I go, whoa, now here's a guy who's worked with De Niro, you know, many times over, like, you know, it's like directed films. It's just absolutely a cinephile. And I go, wait, really? He goes, yeah. He goes, oh, Color of Money is incredible. And I felt like so seen and like two kids that, you know, almost like that scene in Step Brothers where they're like, you know, oh, no way. And then got to geek out with them and just talk about that movie. But yeah, that movie, when that shows up, I just love it to pieces. I can pick it up anywhere. I find so much, again, similar to Searching Bobby Fischer of our show is rooted in my love and lack of understanding, but like grown understanding of Color of Money, that it's all about just male mentoring. You know, father and son relationship, you know, and who he chooses and the way we, you know, treat and hurt people, whether accidentally or, you know, just by being ourselves or not realizing that you're hurting people, both male and female, all the way on the way up or on the way over, wherever you're headed. And yeah, that one knocks me out. Great music, great performances, two of the all-time greatest, like great parts, roles of character actors as well. John Turturro's incredible in it. Yeah. And it just, I love it to pieces. Then Pulp Fiction is a similar thing. Pulp Fiction, as I said earlier, was the first one I went to go see by myself. But
yeah,
that's another one that I've definitely ripped off, you know, accidentally and intentionally, like dozens and dozens of times, whether it be taking a couplet of a phrase, a style choice, a music choice. Like, well, I find that to be just
the Burgerman.
What's that?
Yankee Doodle Burgerman.
Yankee Doodle Burgerman.
Yeah.
But even, I'm just going to call him Boat Guy because we never say his name on the show. But Boat Guy, you know, on the... you know, talking about his foot massages, his technique is sound. I don't be tickling or nothing. I saw Pulp Fiction, you know. But yeah, would put it at the end of in a lot of sketches too and stuff. We do bits. I just think it's a perfect, complicated, you know, fascinating movie. And it was one of those ones that again that I watched that at that time, this would have been, you know, 95, that I was like that obnoxious thing that any kids feel where it's like, oh, if I would have written something, I would have written that. Like, of course you would have.
Yeah. Yeah.
Sure you would have.
Pulp Fiction's fucking incredible. And I did. I think I was the same and saw it a million times at cinema. But Color of Money, I love Scorsese's mainstream, his ones for them.
Yeah.
I think Color of Money, Cape Fear. I love Cape Fear.
Mm-hmm.
He makes a banging Hollywood movie.
Is that what that would be considered a one for them?
I believe so. I believe it was. Because he didn't want it. It's not like one. Most of his films he originates and like Paul Newman asked him to do it.
Yeah.
And he didn't really want to.
Oh, that's great.
Like he was sort of dragged into it and then was like, oh yeah, okay. And he'd never worked, in his mind, he'd never worked with a star before because he'd grown up with De Niro.
Yeah, sure.
So it was sort of like, oh, I'll try and make a sort of mainstream Hollywood film.
Yeah.
Fucking bang.
Yeah.
He makes really good mainstream Hollywood
films. I love it. We went to go see it on the big screen and it was, because it was one of Ezra's favorite too. And we just geeked out the whole time.
Yeah.
I love it. I mean, there's acting things in there that I've definitely, you know, cribbed. Again, whether it's what they're doing or the intention that I got from it, you know, I just, you know, went along. It just always sits there. It's just always sitting there in the back of my head. I feel like I know 5 movies really well, and that's definitely one of them.
Yeah.
You know, and even the way I remember it now, which might not be exactly as it is, if I were to go back, oh, yeah, what is that? How's that go? You know, and then I'd say, oh, you know, you might want to hold on to the teenage cut in my head.
Yeah. That's funny, the teenage cut.
Yeah.
I don't like to be negative. I don't think you love it. What's the worst film you've ever seen?
I don't. Yeah, this was hard because I'm kind of like, they all had like.
Yeah, they've all got something.
They've all got something. But I remember being outraged at Titanic because it also came out the same year as like Magnolia, around the same time as Good Will Hunting. And not that Magnolia was. I think Magnolia was actually maybe 99. Excuse me. So it was definitely. In the same time that I was going to see movies in the theater by myself, as Good Will Hunting. And give me that movie 100 times, mm-hmm. and then I'll watch Titanic. And then I'll watch that 100 more. I'll watch, you know, Good Will Hunting. And it's just the style of movie that I prefer. Now, it doesn't mean visually it's not, you know, captivating and that the performances aren't iconic. The song's badass. They're, you know, you could do that pose and everybody knows what you're doing. I love the iconography of it. But for me, I just was so much more engaged in the storm, the iceberg that, you know, that Robin Williams made Matt Damon hit in his heart.
You would team iceberg.
I want to see someone drown in their own self-esteem or you know, I just love that. And it's silly to put them, you know, neck and neck, side by side, make them competitive. But unfortunately, that's what fucking award shows make you do with art. That's like, okay, well, if I had to pick. And so I remember being upset at that. But I haven't watched it in ages. And I can sit here and I know it's incredible filmmaking.
Yeah.
I mean, for God's sakes, the guy knows what he's doing. He doesn't need me to say otherwise. And so I feel, again, not even from like being a bad show businessman, you know, talking shit about.
He's very sincere, you know. I've read about James Cameron.
Yeah.
Because I didn't like Titanic when I first saw it. But all his stuff. He's very earnest. He makes very earnest.
Yeah.
He really means, there's not a lot of subtlety in anything.
Yeah.
But he really means it.
And I probably
these
was.
Big theme, love. Yeah. He means love.
Oh, yeah,
he
means, I hope so. I'd be curious if people closest to him think. Yeah. I
can't speak to that.
You know, so I mean, I at some point in my life I could have, you know, that would have been, I'd have, you know, 40 answers for you, but that's just me being a prick, you know. At some point, once you have the opportunity to do it and you've gone through it,
anything's good.
It's hard to like, so you know, hard. Talk shit about anything. I unless there's a level of like hubris involved or some type of like behind the scenes shenanigans that you're aware of that you're kind of like, oh, that sucks. But even then, if the work of art like turns out it doesn't excuse any bullshit, but it does, you know, temper it a little bit. Mm. You know, again, I still don't want Linda Blair, you know, getting strapped to a bed that really actually moves like that, and her yelling, screaming, saying stop, stop, and she's not talking about the devil, she's talking about,
yeah,
you know, if that's real, if that's a true story.
I believe so. Yeah. Ellen Best in her back. I didn't like that. I love her.
Yeah,
leave Ellen alone.
Yeah.
What is, you're in comedy, you're a comedian, you're very funny.
Mm-hmm.
What's the film
subjective
that made you laugh the most?
Well, I said it earlier, just invoked it, but like Step Brothers, MacGruber.
Yeah.
I think those are both. I remember seeing Step Brothers by myself in the theaters, and I just like fucking just laughed my ass off. And MacGruber, I went to go see, you know, I've seen many times, and that's always one, especially to a certain age group that grew up with like movies like Schwarzenegger you know, Stallone type films or Van Damme. I think MacGruber is so great. And it really, like, I remember seeing The Jerk. You know, have you gone to see anything at the Hollywood Cemetery yet?
Yes.
Okay, great. Yeah. I would have hoped so. But I remember going to see The Jerk there like, a few summers ago. And as I'm watching it, I was just like, and I didn't love The Jerk the first time I saw it, you know, but in that same weird way that I think we've talked about, like with me and Monty Python, I was like, it's just a bunch of guys dressing up like gals. And then I see it when I'm like 25 and I'm like, this is everything I fucking love, you know. And it's like, the movie's the same. I changed. But The Jerk, I love Steve Martin and like, you know, Three Amigos. I grew up with that. I was just a little bit too young to know him as like the comedy, like, you know, Eddie Murphy was more my generation. And when I saw The Jerk, I watched that and I literally felt like I had like 9-year-old Will Forte sit next to me. Mm. And like I could see, and admit, like, I feel emotional about it because it's like, it made me love the Jerk so much more. But then I also realized that, you know, and I don't know if Will or John Solomon or Yorma, who directed the film, like would own this or but it feels to me like so much like, what if The Jerk was an action hero? Right. Like there's so many similar, like, kind of like, and I don't mean he's ripping them off, I just mean influenced by it. It's so funny to me and so relentless, and everything that I love about Will's style of comedy. It's just 100% original, 100% confident, no holds barred. And for him to have that sort of connection with his writing partner, his good friend, John Solomon, who I worked with at SNL, and then also our buddy Yorma Taccone, who was one of the Lonely Island guys, to the three of them, and then also be able to harmonize, you know, also with Wiggs, and then all the, you know, Ryan Phillippe, and I'm blanking on the fella's name who just passed away, who plays like the general. Like the way that everybody, no, he passed away maybe a couple of years ago at this point. Yeah. I'm blanking on his name, but incredible character actor. But he plays like the, you know, the general, like he's the heavy. And it's one of those things that I just, it, it tickles me to no end. Like, it just, I love it. I think it's hilarious.
Maureen, what's this I hear about you going to film school? I am. I want to gain valuable skills while making films and developing my creativity. So I'm attending the New York Film Academy. I'm thinking about becoming one of them people that writes the numbers on the title board. NYFA is a very respected film school. I hear they offer a variety of options to meet your educational goals, whether you want a BFA or MFA degree, or want to learn at a quicker pace with a short-term program. That's right! They've got workshops and summer camps in filmmaking, acting, cinematography, screenwriting, producing, game design, musical theatre, and more. Are you attending in New York? Might do. They have multiple campuses in some amazing locations like New York, LA, Miami, Italy, Australia, and online. And you can learn more about the New York Film Academy at nyfa.edu. That's nyfa.edu. Thanks, Maureen.
Snag a Job is where America goes to hire, with the deepest talent pool in hourly hiring. With access to over 6 million active hourly workers, Snag a Job is the all-in-one solution for hiring high-quality employees who can cover all your needs. On demand, temp to hire, part-time or full-time. You name the position: warehouse worker, retail associate, grocery store clerk, fitness trainer, baker, stylist, bellhop, podcast producer. Yeah, Snagajob's got a worker for that. With our easy-to-use platform, you're able to seamlessly post and fill available positions quickly, with a dedicated customer support team to provide all the help you need along the way. Kind of nice knowing you have a talent pool like that in your own backyard, right? Snagajob is the partner you need to keep your business running smoothly. So visit snagajob.com or text snag to 242424 to talk to an expert. Snagajob.com, where America goes to hire.
Spectrum One is a big deal. You get Spectrum Internet with the most reliable internet speeds, free advanced Wi-Fi for enhanced security and privacy, and a free Spectrum Mobile Unlimited line with nationwide 5G included, all while saving big. For the big speed, big reliability, and big savings you want, get Spectrum One. Just $49.99 a month for 12 months. Visit spectrum.com/bigdeal for full details. Offer subject to change. Valid for qualified residential customers only. Service not available in all areas. Restrictions apply.
Welcome to the Patreon section.
That's incredible. Now, do you have real music there?
No,
that
was the theme tune.
That was great.
Welcome.
That's smart. Keep the money. Pocket that money for yourself.
Yeah, I mean, yeah. Tom Howe did me a version, but I was like, it's not as good.
It's going to be how much? No. Yeah.
Welcome. Say hello to the patrons.
Hi, patrons.
What is the film that changed your perspective on something?
Okay. There were a couple. And let's see. In order here, I had Beverly Hills Cop. Like, was huge. Dad and I go to see it at 9 years old in the theater. But it was also, like, this fascination with, like, the humanity of race. You know, only one person says the N-word, even though it's all about, you know, class and race, you know. Mm. And it's Eddie Murphy, so, you know, like, but I just loved how funny and how smart he was and how kind he was to everybody. Even the bad guy, you know, even the Victor Maitland for a good, and Jonathan Banks' character for a fair amount. And I think that movie's all about friendship, you know. And, like, I didn't know that at the time, why I loved it. But looking back at it now, it's like, oh, I just love the way he's so... It's very much, very, you know, Ted Lasso, very much rooted in the way he looks towards, you know, Taggart and Rosewood, being like, you know, guys are super cops, you know, like, and he doesn't get mad when they rat him out. He's like, it was working. I don't know. I don't get you guys, but I'm going to figure it out. Like, that's all there. But it was like, there was just a level of humanity to that. And I love that it was in a black fella, you know, like growing up in the suburbs, you know, like we had a few people of color, like, you know, but like not many at all, you know. And so it was lovely to sort of be able to view that as this, you know, white kid from the suburbs. And just, he was just such a kick-ass character doing right by people. I love that. The second one I brought up just a second ago was Boys in the Hood. Mm. And that was lovely to see the music that I was listening to at that time. I was listening to a lot of gangster rap, like Ice-T and N.W.A. And it was really, really, but I was a poser, you know, I was a tourist. You know, I was just listening to it because... You know, we weren't supposed to and all that stuff. But I didn't really understand the stories behind these stories. It just all was, you know, cops and robbers, you know, or you know, Cowboys and Indians back then, as we would say. And so Bloods and Crips were like no different than Sharks and Jets from West Side Story. And then you see this movie, and not that it's a documentary by any means, but the fact that it showed these very human sides of the of these conflicts going on, and even a deeper understanding of why maybe those conflicts are going on, and why people gravitate towards those kind of conflicts, and the importance of having mentors or figures in your life or aspirations beyond those conflicts to help you like navigate the world, but also maybe even like circumvent those conflicts. And so, yeah, that movie was a big one for me because it helped me feel a little bit more the humanity, the real side of this art that I was ingesting unknowingly and whatnot. And then the other one that came to mind that really got me was Dead Man Walking.
Oh, great.
With Susan Sarandon. I remember watching that. I think it might have been when I was working at Blockbuster Video, and I remember watching it in my home because I'd get 5 free rentals a week. Mm-hmm. My favorite thing was the 5 free rentals and then the employees' picks, right. A number of which I've mentioned. And but I remember watching Dead Man Walking and feeling that way about the death penalty. Just when she goes into her thing, just like so calculated, so controlled, you know, like so cynical. I was like, as bad as it can be, I don't know if it's that bad. And I respect anybody who's gone through a situation where they've had, but I am a believer in restorative justice. It's again an underlying theme of our TV show, whether we've ever spoken about it or not, but. I think some of that is deeply rooted in that film and the way it just, you know, and sister, you know, Prigine, I forget how you say her last name, but I just found that to be very, very moving in a way that I wasn't anticipating.
Yeah.
I just wanted to watch, you know, Spicoli be a badass, right? Yeah.
That's a great film.
Yeah. Yeah. I haven't watched it in probably since it was, the week it came out on video.
Yeah. I'd love to know what your employee picks were.
Some were already said. So Pulp Fiction would have been on there. Probably Die Hard. Yeah. Which I haven't mentioned, but absolute, I think, brilliant and all about fucking how stupid guys are. Leaving Las Vegas would have been in there.
Yeah.
I mean, Golden Child probably would have been in there before Beverly Hills Cop at that point. You know what I mean? Without me knowing it, just being like, I'll pick the path less traveled. Exorcist. Rope.
Oh,
Rope,
yeah, right.
Rope, Rope was in there. Yeah. Did you enjoy it?
Yeah.
Yeah. Had you ever seen it before?
Rope was basically the only Hitchcock film I hadn't seen.
Yeah.
It's the ultimate, there's a bomb under the table. There's 100%. A body under the table.
Yeah, yeah.
100%. So the whole film is tense.
Yeah.
Automatically. It's great.
It's automatically tense. Again, that was when I started getting that movie when reading about how movies were made and the fact that it was done, you know, in these big shots and then people were moving furniture. And I loved, again, that the notion that just translated to me as being a former, at that point, just about the end of my basketball playing career. But people all working together for a common goal, even if they're on the bench, you know, they're not on camera, quote unquote, but the way they play, the way they practice, the way they cheer and encourage from the sides, you know, I found that fascinating. Love, you know, Jimmy Stewart, obviously, and then the fact that it was based on a real thing, you know, like the Leopold and Loeb murders, who were, you know, a couple, you know, the Smarty Pants that went to the University of Chicago in like the 40s and then, you know, killed a guy for sport, you know, type thing. Getting a little bit wrong, but I loved that idea that you could take real life and then do something else with it, like kind of like almost get to replay it, you know, to a certain degree. You know, I mean, we've talked about that, the elements of our show is like things that through either my character or other people's characters got to replay things that I you know, fucked up in my opinion, you know, and so instead of having regrets or guilt, you know, it's turning into art. Color of Money would have been in there.
Yeah.
But yeah, I mean, I don't think there's anything. Oh, Sleepless in Seattle would have definitely been in there.
Oh, yeah.
Yeah, 100%. And Willy Wonka.
Nice. What's the greatest opening to a film?
First one that came to mind was The Hustler, for me, oddly enough. The prequel, if you will, to The Color of Money, which is the way I love sharing those movies with people now, is that because Color of Money is such a as you were saying, a banger, a hit, like the music, everything, boom, it gets you into these characters. Whereas, you know, a little more meditative, you know, a little more deliberate and slow. And again, black and white and all those, you know, things that some people instinctually have issues with to watch the Hustler. But if they love The Color of Money, then you're okay, now let's go back in time and watch how the son of a gun became who he was. We'll see where the fast Eddie came from. But I just think it's a great, I love that scene because it sets a tone and makes it. It's, I mean, same thing with these ones that you say not to use, you know, Inglourious Basterds, Raiders, you know, like where it sets a tone. It's not, you're taken care of, but then he's fucking great at what he does. And he's like, and you're like, boom, okay, I know who the hustler is. I know what his deal is. Let's see what happens. But I think, was it Hitchcock or somebody that said that, like, you know, if you make a person good at their job, they're more likable. Like that's inherently likable, or some version of that. It may not be Hitchcock.
That's interesting.
But I think I've
that sounds like Stephen King.
Does it? Or like, yeah,
Stephen King has a whole thing about how people in stories they love people at work, they love people's jobs,
but what they're good at it.
I guess it.
I feel like there's something in my head that I put in there a long time ago. I've attributed it to Hitchcock, but maybe that's just all actors are cattle, and I'm just trying to find the rosier side of it.
Yeah, you know, I'm not sure he was.
But it's something about if someone's good at their job, you know, they're inherently interesting, maybe more than likable, but interesting. Yeah. And so, like, I love that Martin Riggs in Lethal Weapon is a fucking like badass shot.
Yeah,
you know, like right, like the fact that he could take a dude out from that far away is great. It's he's not just crazy. He's also
very good at
crazy good. Yeah. Right. But yeah, The Hustler is one that comes to mind.
And we used the end in episode 9. Mm-hmm.
We do. Yeah. That was a fun day on set to like show all those young fellas, like me holding on my iPad, like Lloyd Dobler and his boombox and Say Anything. I'm like holding up the, remember? Like, this is what we're doing. This is what we're doing.
We tried to explain it, and then you're like, come in here. And everyone came in the office.
And they just watched, and they're like, yo, that movie looks so dope. Yeah. It's like, yeah, the movie's great. But did everybody get what they're doing? What did we do that? 2 takes? 3 takes?
Yeah. Probably.
Like, whenever we did those, like those fucking dudes. I mean, but that's what I love about working with former athletes and theater folk is like they understand blocking. They understand, they understand running a play. They understand the purpose of the play. Like, oh, maybe I'm just here to just have this little moment. Nobody makes it too much about themselves.
Yeah.
But I love that ending of that episode. I mean, for your character, most specifically, and the song is perfect, but just watching everybody take their little moment and knowing what we're doing. And
we just quickly worked out a specific handshake for everyone.
Yeah. Or a tap here, a tap there, and then you tap on the sign, and off we go onto the finale.
What's the greatest ending to a film?
Do you know my answer? I've talked about it a lot. We watched it in the writer's room a bunch. Not a bunch, but at least I remember it being a thing. Even this last season, I think. Third Man.
Oh, yeah. Okay.
Come on. Like, yeah. I mean.
We specifically watched the ending a number of times. Yeah. We never used that though, right?
No, I forget. I'm trying to remember why we watched it. There's something in the show that's rooted.
Isn't it visually like when Beard comes up behind Ted, when the phone bill we've talked about?
Maybe.
But it's not, obviously a very, but it's very not different.
That it's it, yeah.
Feel.
I can't remember. I can't remember why. Yeah. It may have been a storyline that we didn't actually end up manifesting. But regardless, the end of that, the end of that movie, because I think it's real. It doesn't mean that he doesn't chase her. It doesn't mean that you know, like whatever. But for the end of that specific story of that movie, I just think it's badass, and it's so. You got the Anton Karas score. You got the, you know, like the leading man leaning against his car. And here she comes walking down this beautiful tree-lined street. And you know what's going to happen. You know what's going to happen. And then she, what happened? And it's just, it takes a while. And it's not, but it's one of those times that, one of those things that we talked about, like in the writer's room here and there. It's like, yeah, scene can take its time when it has a good, you know, I would say punchline. Like even if it's not for a laugh, it's like, oh, but if you know what it is, like we could have James Tart like keep needling his son make that slow walk across the room, because we know that Roy's going to make that quick walk across after he gets escorted out. So it's going to be like this, and then you don't even know. We didn't have the George Harrison song at that point, but you knew it. Like, it's one of those things where you just, I know it'll present itself when it's supposed to be, you know. It's just we didn't need it there. It already had music to it. It already had, you know, lifts and drops and falls, and, you know, like it felt orchestrated in a way that was just like working. I mean, we pretty much worked backwards from that hug, if I remember correctly. Like, not, or to a degree. Like, I just remember seeing the hug very clearly and just being like, okay.
What's your favorite film?
I don't know if I've seen it yet, you know? Having a dad who didn't necessarily, or still having a dad who doesn't necessarily know his role, or didn't have it to pull from, whether of what to do or what not to do, just not there at all. And then being an older brother, feel like movies and certainly television provided me with a bunch of examples of older brothers, you know, uncles. It was always kind of funny to have like a famous uncle when I also had all these other people that I almost maybe subconsciously considered uncles, whether it be Tom Hanks and Michael Keaton and people that I've actually like got to hang out with at this point through Saturday Night Live, or just, you know, one reason or another. Music was always that, felt that way too. That it's hard for me to say what the favorite is, because it changes. It changes all the time. It changes all the time.
Today.
Today.
The day that you were assassinated.
Yeah.
Basketball court.
I mean, I'm trying to shake it, but it keeps, like, you know, just say it. Dead Poets Society. Which I wouldn't have mentioned at all, but it's like, it's like, Jiminy Christmas.
You did that as a play.
Did it as a play.
And I didn't know you or live in America, so I didn't see it.
You're probably, the movie holds up. You'd probably be better off watching the movie. I mean, all the fellas were great in it. How
did you do it, knowing the film as well as I'm assuming you did? Like, as in...
I wasn't doing an impression. I did it my version.
Were there things where you like, I have to not do that just because it's a bit like, was it David Tricky, that side of it?
No, it wasn't. It wasn't that, it didn't feel that way. Okay. And I certainly wasn't directed that way. And Tom Schulman wrote the play, but it was like a first time it had been done. So a fellow named John Doyle, who's a lovely man, accomplished director in New York on Broadway, et cetera. And then a bunch of young fellas, you know, and one gal played Knox Over Streets, the woman he yearns for. But no, there in times gone past, like when I would do, like, I didn't do plays in high school. I would do like a speech and debate class, and we would do scenes. We would do like scenes from like plays, but sometimes from movies. And like, you know, A Few Good Men, the courtroom scene, you know, you can't handle the truth. I'd play the Tom Cruise part. And my buddy Ryan would play the Jack Nicholson part. So you have two, like, you know, 17-year-olds trying to do, you know, this, like, heavy duty scene. Like, I want the truth. You know, did you order the code red? Okay. And we would do it for like, you know, on Saturday mornings at like competing high school, you know, for like whatever, for class credit and grades and whatnot. But I would always try to do an impression straight up of like, I was trying to do Tom Cruise, like his cadence, how, when he got mad at how he got mad. And it was kind of interesting. And I sort of took that same idea like to Second City when I worked there. Cause when you first work there, if you get the chance, like in the touring companies, you do archive scenes, you do scenes that, you know, people had done before. And I would pick scenes based on, you know, a couple of people that I really, really aspired, you know, to be, like a guy named Scott Adson, a guy named Kevin Dorff. They were both like, you know, heroes of mine. And Kevin, even at that point, even being like an older brother mentor to me when I first got there. And I'd watch their scene and I would just basically do impressions of them. But people didn't know you're doing impressions of them because they weren't quote unquote famous, like as if you were doing Humphrey Bogart or something like that, or Chris Farley, you know. And for me, it was just all about trying to serve the piece, trying to get the same laughs that the person who created the role got, right? So now I'm not trying to like keep up with that tally board in my head of trying to get those laughs. So then it was like when saying yes to Dead Poets Society, I'd already worked at Second City that had heroes that were, you know, standing above me, Saturday Night Live, like heroes, legends, like, you know, that just as ghosts standing.
Yeah, yeah.
And then in some real life, you know, in living legends, like, you know, Wig and Bill and Andy and, you know, Fred, et cetera, you know, like right next to me at the same read through table. So I was like used to like taking on something. Robin Williams had just passed, you know, just a little bit prior. And I just loved that role. I loved that role growing up. I loved watching it. I had always answered the question, if you weren't doing what you're doing now, what would you do? I was like, oh, I'd like to coach basketball and teach, you know, teach English or teach like, you know, theater or something like that. So I get to pretend to be a teacher for a little bit as a new father. I mean, I remember us performing that piece, that story, the night of the election in 2016, you know, and it was very surreal to like, right. and then even more surreal to do it in the nights following, you know, when there were like protests in Union Square Park, like, you know, just two blocks away from where we were. And yet when I go there, I went by there in between after rehearsal and before our show. And who would I run into? Josh Charles, who played Knox Over Street.
Yeah.
I was like, hey, and I'd known him because he'd come see improv shows all the time. I was like, hey, I'm doing this thing. He goes, oh, it's so great. He goes, you know that in the movie, John Keating was dying. And then Peter Weir told Tom to take that out. It's like, don't have him die. Don't have him die because that kind of takes away from the whole story. I mean, I'm telling you, this is probably like going to be 65% correct based on the retelling. So, you know, someone might know the story better and I would defer. But yeah, but it, just for him to share that was like, he was just very human with it. And he was, you know, he's supportive of it. And like, you know, but and then I go back in there and, hey, I saw and he said, you know, good luck and break a leg and he's excited for us. And so fascinating the way those things change and just even during production and process. And yeah, Tom Schulman won the Oscar for that screenplay. Would he have if
he'd been dying?
I don't know. Or would people have been like, that's too much. Just have the romantic get booted from the school because of bureaucracy and we'll vote for that. But if he's dying, that's a bridge too far.
Fascinating. Jason Sudeikis, you've been wonderful as
thank you.
Entirely expected. Likewise. However, when you were playing basketball, minding your own business, being very good at basketball as you are, but from behind, you could be mistaken, certainly from an upper window, for a former president. And someone was trying to assassinate that former president for various important political reasons.
Yeah.
And they pulled the trigger, bang, back of the head, dead.
I remember what it sounded like.
Can you replicate it with your web? Pew! It had a silencer on it.
Yeah.
I was walking along the court, walking around Brooklyn, right? With my coffin, you know what I'm like. And I see a lot of people standing around the court not playing. I'm like, play ball. What are we doing?
Yep.
And everyone goes, I think the former president's been shot. And I go, what? Former president playing basketball? And I come on the court.
Mm.
And there you are, dead, splattered on the court, everywhere. It's a mess. And because of the impact of the bullet, your face has spread out across the court and got like caught amongst the tarmac.
Yeah, I'm sure. The probably at that point would be just concrete.
Concrete, just concrete.
Outside, yeah.
So I'm like, oh God, guys, can anyone get a digger? We get a digger. I have to drill into the concrete to get all the bits of you out. Stuff all of you in this
like a concrete. Banksy.
Yeah. That's what
they have to do with Banksys, yeah.
Yeah, well, it's exactly like that. You were a Banksy. That was the twist of the line.
I'll be damned, this guy.
Yeah.
Or gal, I don't know.
I push everything in the coffin, but there's concrete. There's more of you than I was expecting. Certainly, visually, I hadn't predicted this much.
Heavy.
Stuff. Heavy as well, very heavy. Well, I'm strong, but it was difficult. Anyway, I get everything in the coffin, but it's jammed.
Mm-hmm.
There's no room in there. There's only enough room for me to slip one DVD into the side, for you to take across to the other side. And on the other side, it's movie night every night. What film are you taking to show the tacos in heaven when it is your movie night, Jason Sudeikis, please?
If possible, I'd take seasons 1, 2, and 3 of Ted Lasso.
Just do Q&As.
Just be like, here. But then maybe...
That's lovely.
I mean, that feels...
Technically a film, but it's one big film.
It's true, it's not. Then you know
always
what?
Said it was one big film, 3-hour film. Sorry.
One big 3-hour story, yeah. One big old story, because we definitely did more than 3 hours.
Mm. Three acts,
sorry, yeah.
Yeah.
No, you know what I'll do? I'll take Sleepless in Seattle.
Because it's you, I'm going to also let you take...
Like have like a case logic, like little slide thing where I can take a couple. I mean, I don't have to take Ted Lasso season 1 through 3. I can...
Well, they can probably download it if they've got Apple.
Yeah. It's where the iCloud, but they just call it a cloud.
Yeah.
They say cloud.
So, okay, you can have that on the cloud and then the actual physical DVD.
I'll take Sleepless in Seattle.
Okay,
lovely. Yeah, yeah.
Jason, before we sign off, may I say in public on here, thank you for everything.
Mm.
Thank you for changing my life. Thank you for having me on the boat.
Mm.
Thank you for all of it. If this is the end of it all, I will miss it terribly, but it's been wonderful. And if it isn't, great.
If this conversation is the end?
If this is the end of it all, if we're both assassinated on the way out of here.
Oh, the irony. Does someone have the code to get this podcast out if we are assassinated before you get in there?
I think if we are assassinated on the way out, I sort of hope no one has the code and then that it becomes like a...
Oh, yeah.
Sort of thing that's talked about. I think there was a podcast.
I heard they had just done a podcast.
Yeah, but no one has a code to get unlock the recording.
Yeah, that'd be great. I'd almost prefer that.
Yeah.
Let me send a text. Hold on.
Let me get in touch with a couple of assassins.
if you find the right guy or gal, you only need one. Mm-hmm.
Yeah. And we could, if we stand close enough to each
magic
other,
bullet,
one bullet.
Magic bullet sign, just... Through
great,
right through your head, right through my heart. It'd go down.
Yeah.
Be something. We're the Mythbusters when you need them. Is that possible, fellas? Did you have that show?
I think it is possible.
I think it is.
I've done it in a computer game, so it must be possible.
Yeah, it's got to be possible.
Thank you, and God bless you.
God, we almost didn't talk about Fortnite at all, did we?
Yeah.
But we got it in.
Is there anything you would like to tell people to look out for or listen to in the coming weeks, months, or years of your
those
life.
Those angels that we spoke about earlier.
Yeah.
Look out for those.
Keep your eyes on them.
Yeah, keep an eye out for them. Or if you can't see one, it must mean you are supposed to be that for someone else.
I like this. I really like this.
If you talk long enough, something interesting happens.
People will take it as me. That's the thing. If you need meaning, it's always there.
Yeah, exactly. Yeah, absolutely. Lean in.
Thank you. Jason.
Thank you, Brad. Thanks for having me.
Thank you for doing
about this. About time. Why did it take you so long to ask me?
I don't know. No. I'm shy.
No.
Good day to you and have a wonderful day.
Thank you.
I love you. Good night.
So that was episode 262. Head over to the Patreon at patreon.com/Brett Goldstein for The Secret and the video with Jason. Remember to watch all of Ted Lasso on Apple TV+. Go to Apple Podcasts, give us a 5-star rating, but write about the film that means the most to you and why. It's a lovely thing to read. My neighbour Maureen loves it, and it's all very appreciated. Thank you so much for listening. Thank you to Jason for being so good and giving me all his time and changing my life. Thanks to Scroobius Pip and the Distraction Pieces Network. Thanks to Buddy Peace for producing it. Thanks to iHeartMedia and Will Ferrell's Big Money Players Network for hosting it. Thanks to Adam Richardson for the graphics and Lisa Lydon for the photography. Come and join me next week for another brilliant guest. I hope you're all well. That is it for now. In the meantime, have a lovely week. And please, now more than ever, be excellent to each other. Sometimes I dream of becoming an actor. Have you ever dreamt of becoming an actor? Maureen, what is it you think I do for a living? Never mind. Sounds like you need the New York Film Academy. NYFA offers workshops, BFA and MFA degrees and summer camps in filmmaking, acting, journalism and more, online and on campuses across the globe. To make films alongside industry professionals, explore more at nyfa.edu. Thanks, Brett. Thank you, Maureen.
Maureen, your Canva presentation looks brilliant. Thanks, Brett. That's because I used AI-powered Canva presentations. I just described what I wanted, and Canva presentations generated the perfect slides. You can even make a talking presentation for people to watch on their own time. Check this out. Recording. 101 Reasons Why Beaches is the Saddest Film Ever Made by your neighbour Maureen. Is it easy to use? If you can use a computer, you can nail your next work presentation with Canva Presentations at canva.com. Designed for work. Oh, thanks, my neighbor Maureen. Yeah, thank you.
Hey, guys. Back at the playground again, huh?
Yep. You know what this playground could use? A wine country.
Heck yeah. And some waves. So we could go surfing.
Oh, yeah. Ah, love that.
A redwood forest would be cool.
I'm in.
Ah, ski slopes.
Let's do it.
Can a girl go shopping?
Yeah, baby.
Wait. Did we just invent California?
Discover why California is the ultimate playground at visitcalifornia.com.